Good afternoon. My name is Susan Muirhead, and today I'll be reading part one of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, August 18th, 2020. Let's begin with some of our headlines from today. The first headline reads, Coronavirus Testing, How to Figure Out If You're Getting Tested for Free. This article is written by Deborah Pressey and is based out of Champaign. If you assume coronavirus testing is always free, for any reason, at any testing location, you might want to check with your health insurer. Officials at Carle Health and Christie Clinic said free testing done for any reason without any charge to the patient is currently available at the state testing site at Marketplace Mall. Testing done by local medical providers is generally billed to patients' insurers. And take note, health insurers are looking for those tests to have been medically indicated, according to Christie Clinic Clinical Services Director Michelle Antonacci. Medically indicated means one of these three factors are present. The patient has symptoms, has been exposed to someone with COVID-19, or is testing in advance of a medical procedure, she said. Under the Federal Health Emergency Declaration in effect through October 21st, medically indicated testing should be covered 100% without cost sharing, according to Carle. Exempt from that requirement are tests done for public health surveillance, workplace health and safety, and any other reasons not intended for diagnosis or treatment. Health Alliance Medical Plan's Chief Operating Officer, Sinead Rice Madigan, said Health Alliance will cover the entire cost of COVID-19 testing when it's been ordered by a medical provider. The provider needn't be a patient's primary care doctor, she said. Tests ordered through Carle's COVID-19 hotline, for example, or by an attending physician at a hospital would be covered too. The potential for cost sharing for COVID-19 testing is one reason local medical providers are urging patients who want to be tested but don't have any of the applicable medical reasons to get tested at the state's free testing site at the mall, according to Carle and Christie. What we don't want is for anybody to get a surprise bill that we have been reading about in other places, said Carle spokeswoman Jamie Mullen. It's important for Carle patients to call Carle's COVID-19 hotline to be guided to the appropriate testing site, she said. Christie Clinic has discontinued its dedicated hotline for COVID-19 and is asking patients to be guided to the right testing place by their individual physician offices. All COVID-19 calls regarding symptoms, testing, and inquiries are now being handled by each patient's provider, not a COVID-19 hotline, Antonacci said. How about coverage for COVID-19-related visits and treatment? Patients are, again, advised to check with their insurers. Health Alliance handles coverage for COVID-19 as it does for other diseases under patients' health plans, subject to copayments and deductibles, Madigan said. Coverage would generally follow your health plan benefit design, she said. OSF Healthcare also bills insurers for COVID-19 testing and treatment, according to Lori Hurwitz, OSF's Senior Vice President of Revenue Cycle. Patients cannot get COVID testing at OSF healthcare facilities without a provider order, and any test ordered would be billed to insurance, she said. Many insurance plans cover the cost, but this depends on a patient's individual health plan. Again, she advised patients who want to be tested without a medical provider order can do that at the state testing site in Champaign. Coronavirus-related care and treatment through OSF are also billed to patients' health insurance, Hurwitz said. Lost your job and now uninsured? Both OSF and Carle reminded patients they have financial assistance programs to which eligible patients can apply for help with bills. OSF also has financial navigators available to help patients understand their options, Hurwitz said. The next headline reads, Champaign County Anti-Racist Coalition. Current chief gets apology. Ex-chief responds. This article is written by Jeff D'Alessio and is based out of Champaign. In his first public statement since the Champaign Police Building was defaced with messages, some of which were denounced by local officials as ugly and hateful, quote-unquote, the Champaign County Anti-Racist Coalition acknowledged that last week's demonstration crossed into negative territory that we do not condone. In an email written to the News Gazette on behalf of the CCARC, that's the Champaign County Anti-Racist Coalition, organizer Rita Connerly apologized to Champaign Police Chief Anthony Cobb for a message that included a racial slur. The statement also called on Cobb's predecessor, R.T. Finney, to apologize for the 2009 shooting death of 15-year-old Kawani Carrington. Later Monday, the former chief of Champaign Police pointed out that he had already done so years earlier, adding, "I believe that my apology was documented rather clearly by the News Gazette as well as other local news outlets." Connerly said Thursday's gathering was an attempt to continue to spread our message through peaceful demonstration, expressive artwork, and community fellowship. While we will not apologize for our general mission, we do understand community concerns that, in an attempt to bring awareness to a very serious issue, artistic expression at CPD crossed into negative territory that we do not condone. And while we sincerely apologize for the message aimed at Chief Cobb, we hope that CPD and former Police Chief R.T. Finney can one day sincerely apologize to the community and to the families of those such as Kawani Carrington, Richie Turner, Toya Frazier, etc., and be willing to admit their own wrongdoing as well. Ms. Frazier died in 2015 of an accidental overdose on, diphenhydramine, while in custody at the Champaign County Jail, leading to a wrongful death lawsuit. Mr. Turner died the following year, 2016, after a struggle with police. An excessive force lawsuit brought by Mr. Turner's sister was dismissed last year by U.S. Magistrate Judge Eric Long, who ruled that officers' actions were reasonable when they called for an ambulance, held Mr. Turner on the ground, and handcuffed him. Finney took exception to CCARC's statement, writing in an email to the News Gazette that it is apparent that Ms. Connolly is ignorant to the history or facts of her allegation. If an apology is offered with conditions or excuses, it means the apology is insincere, and they are likely to commit the same mistake again. Unlike Ms. Connolly, Finney added, "I offered an apology and took responsibility. She would do well to do the same. She should immediately apologize for the threatening remarks written about the men and women who proudly serve the Champaign Police Department and denounce those who used the racial statements against Chief Cobb without demands or conditions to cheapen her already weak attempt at deflection and attention." CCARC's statement went on to say, "Our art has been proven to be effective in exposing a whitewashed society in the city of Champaign and how they allowed a racist barbershop to thrive in the heart of our city's downtown. We also note that the chalking has spread joy as expressed by Plant Mode owner Mathis Helmick in reaction to art in front of his store. In addition, we have celebrated our city manager, Dorothy David, with a beautiful piece of chalk art. We do not condone the hateful racist or racial message left towards Chief Cobb and respect his role as the highest authority of the Champaign Police Department. We have always encouraged demonstrators to use water-soluble art items per each municipality's codes and will continue to do so. We will also continue to spread our message through peaceful demonstrations, art, and community fellowship. It is our hope that our community and our police officers can thoughtfully work together to make meaningful change. We do understand that as a community, we must learn to listen, respect, and trust one another through collaborative efforts. Thank you all for your continued support." The next headline reads, John Phipps, A Life Remembered. That's Phipps, P-H-I-P-P-S, and John, J-O-H-N. Champagne lawyer, mentor, mediator with zest for life. This article is written by Mary Shank and is based out of Champaign. A Champaign lawyer whose legal career spanned 10 U.S. presidents, 11 Illinois governors, and 50 years in the same office has passed. John Phipps died last week at age 82 after what friends described as a robust and interesting life, the last 16 months of which were marked by lung cancer. I don't think he actually stopped working. He kind of slid to a halt. Lawyering and working were incredibly important to him, said son-in-law Jim Martinkus, married to one of Mr. Phipps' two daughters, Anne Martinkus. Mr. Phipps also had a son. Both Jim and Anne Martinkus are also Champaign County lawyers. Anne Martinkus and her mother, Dodie Phipps, were with Mr. Phipps when he died at his Champaign home. A lawyer since 1965, the Air Force veteran, University of Illinois College of Law graduate and grandfather to many, is being remembered as a patient mentor who loved the practice of law and sharing what he knew about it and many other topics. He could go from talking about Illinois basketball to what the Chicago Symphony was performing to every Shakespeare play he ever saw, said retired Champaign County Judge Arnold Blockman, a friend of Mr. Phipps for 45 years. He was an interesting guy with a real zest for life. Mr. Phipps had a general practice, but did a lot of family law in the last 15 years of his career, much of it in Blockman's courtroom before Blockman left the bench in 2016. He was the father of third-party resolution, mediation, and started the whole thing for the state, Blockman said. Blockman laughed that even though Mr. Phipps had the same downtown Champaign office for just over 50 years, he ran his practice from coffee houses, including the Daily Grind, Atlanta Bread Company, Panera Bread, and Harvest Market, the last place Blockman saw his friend about 3 weeks ago. Urbana attorney John Tice called Mr. Phipps a giant in the local and state bar, where he served as a chair on many Illinois State Bar Association committees. The common denominator for his activities was helping the ISBA serve its core membership, Tice added. In 2007, the ISBA showed its appreciation by naming him a laureate for his career service. The Champaign County Bar Association named him a pillar of the bar in 2009 for his life's work. His influence on the profession went well beyond Champaign County. John was the first president of Land of Lincoln Legal Aid, which is now, by geography, the largest legal aid organization in Illinois, covering the southern 65 counties. He served as that organization's president for 13 years. Both Land of Lincoln and the ISBA were in John's DNA, and Tice, who called Mr. Phipps the quintessential general practitioner. His practice was broad-based, and he simply loved serving clients, Tice said. Aside from our interactions as bar leaders, I also had cases with John and against him. He was always a vigorous advocate for his clients. Martinkus said his father-in-law never tired of talking about the law. Ann and I would come home beat and not want to talk about our cases, but we would try to indulge him the best we could, said Martinkus. He was just a lover of the law. Hannah Wentz got that impression almost from the first moment she met Mr. Phipps. A 2013 graduate of the U of I College of Law, Wentz started as a law clerk for Mr. Phipps 2 years earlier. Now in a solo general practice in Villa Grove, Wentz called Mr. Phipps a wonderful mentor and friend. He said, you need to do things that make you happy or make you money, or both. That has guided me in a lot of decisions, Wentz said. And one of my favorites, once when discussing how to present our case in court, he said, you need to say what you came to say and shut up. That's just great advice in general. Wentz said Mr. Phipps has been her go-to for help. In the last almost 10 years, I have called John at least weekly, and in the beginning it was probably more like daily, she said. He was always calming and helpful, and he never made me feel bad for a single question, even though there were probably a few dumb ones in there. He was always busy, but he never hesitated to take as much time as he needed to help me. He told me many times that part of our job was to pay it forward and help out the next generation of attorneys. The next headline reads, Restore Illinois Phase 4, Day 54 by the numbers. Illinois impact. Baby among 9 new Vermillion cases. Hospitalizations down 2 in Champaign County. MTD to scale back. A baby was among 9 new COVID-19 cases reported Monday in Vermillion County, officials said. Also testing positive, 2 residents in their 20s, a grade school-aged child, and residents in their 30s, 50s, 70s, 80s, and 90s. In Champaign County, hospitalizations were down by 2 overnight to 12, while the active case count grew by 2 to 122. New county testing numbers remained unavailable for the 4th straight day. As expected, the Champaign-Urbana Mass Transit District said it will begin reducing scheduled service Friday. Reductions will primarily affect routes serving the U of I campus and late-night service after 1 a.m. 76.2% of active cases in Champaign County fall in CU. So here it is by the numbers. Zip code 61820, which is Champaign, 28 cases. 61802 zip code out of Urbana, 23 cases. 61801, Urbana, 17 cases. 61821, Champaign, 13 cases. 61822, Champaign, 12 cases. And attention, Illinois travelers, steer clear of Georgia, Florida, California, and Texas, which have the most cases per 100,000 people. The IDPH on Monday released U.S. and international travel guidance maps, and you can find those online at newsgazette.com. The next headline reads, Daybook of the Top of the Morning, Something to Get You Going Today, courtesy of Vice President Jim Rosso. Natalie Porter, and there's a picture, and I'll explain the picture in just a moment, describe it for you. Natalie Porter, one of the area's best high school swimmers, showed up in style for Sunday's annual, but much different looking, Faces of the Fall photo shoot at our office in Champaign. The Danville High standout was proud to show off the minivan she purchased from her grandmother, admitting the ride is popular with her classmates. Usually, Faces of the Fall draws more than 300 high schoolers who tour the News-Gazette, produce radio spots and gifts, and take part in other social media opportunities to be shared by Preps coordinator Colin Likas. However, due to coronavirus restrictions, Sunday's event took place outdoors with photos only, each masked athlete having signed up for time slots 5 minutes apart. Still, it was a wonderful event thanks to the understanding students and parents who, in some cases, drove more than an hour to participate. Hopefully we'll be able to open our doors for Faces of the Winter in November. Sunday's 90-plus portraits will run through the fall in these pages and at newsgazette.com. So there's a picture of Natalie Porter, and she's got a face mask on, and she's standing next to a gray minivan, hopefully smiling underneath the mask. And then that's provided to us by Jim Rosso. And then there's another photo of Natalie Porter, and it's not her. It's someone in a similar t-shirt. Armstrong Potomac's Carolyn Croizier, C-R-O-Z-I-E-R, Croizier, and her mother Jennifer, and they're standing in front of the News-Gazette building. The next headline reads, History, Area History. In 1920, North Market Street in Urbana, between Main Street and the Big Four railway tracks, was to be repaved at once. Frank Summers was awarded the contract for $26,531. Property owners on both sides of the street had agreed to put in 12-foot sidewalks. In 1970, a fire bombing hit the Red Lion Inn, located at 211 East Green Street in Champaign. Champaign police were notified around 10:50 p.m. that about 100 youths were creating a disturbance inside the building. About an hour later, a firebomb was thrown near the building. There was no significant property damage. In 2005, the felling of trees was the first sign of construction on Champaign's new library, but customers wouldn't feel any change for more than a month. September 1st was the date set for a groundbreaking ceremony in the northwest corner of the site, bordered by Green, Healy, Randolph, and State Streets, complete with sand so kids could dig for treasure with plastic shovels. A new entrance on the south side would be the first thing users notice, probably in the last week of September, said Champaign Public Library Director Marcia Grove. And in international history, today's highlight. On August 18, 1920, the 19th Amendment to the Constitution, guaranteeing all American women's right to vote, was ratified as Tennessee became the 36th state to approve it. On this date, in 1587, Virginia Dare became the first child of English parents to be born in America, on what is now Roanoke Island in North Carolina. However, the Roanoke colony ended up mysteriously disappearing. In 1846, during the Mexican-American War, U.S. forces led by General Stephen W. Kearny occupied Santa Fe in present-day New Mexico. In 1894, Congress established the Bureau of Immigration. In 1914, President Woodrow Wilson issued his Proclamation of Neutrality, aimed at keeping the United States out of World War I. And in 1963, James Meredith became the first Black student to graduate from the University of Mississippi. The next headline reads, Chicago protests. City's top cop defends police actions. Brown. Video footage shows concerted effort made by protesters to provoke confrontation. This article is written by the Associated Press and is based out of Chicago. Chicago's police superintendent defended his officers' actions during weekend clashes with protesters, saying Monday that they acted professionally in the face of a concerted effort by those in the crowd trying to provoke a violent confrontation with them. Video footage shows some in the crowd donning gas masks, changing clothes to hide their identities, and putting up umbrellas, a tactic seen at recent protests that is meant to shield from view people throwing projectiles at officers, Superintendent David Brown told reporters. From what I saw, they only took appropriate action when confronted with violence, he said. Mayor Lori Lightfoot praised the department's response to Saturday evening's protest that turned into a violent clash between demonstrators and police officers, saying officers quelled the violence quickly to protect peaceful protesters. But a number of activists and lawmakers have condemned the officers' actions, saying the officers were the aggressors. CPD, Chicago Police Department, pepper sprayed and beat up protesters, youth, and members of the press. Berto Aguayo, executive director for Increase the Peace, said in a statement released to news organizations, "We demand an apology from the Chicago Police Department and the mayor's office for violating our rights to peacefully assemble and for their abhorrent attacks on peaceful protesters." Brown said police made 24 arrests, and that four of those arrested were charged with felonies. Among the four were a 24-year-old man who was charged after he allegedly struck a uniformed officer with a bullhorn, and a 25-year-old man who allegedly struck an officer with a skateboard. The other two were a 24-year-old woman who allegedly tried to steal a camera that had been pulled off an officer's uniform during the protest, and an 18-year-old college student who was charged with aggravated battery after she allegedly twice tried to grab the arm of a high-ranking member of the department. Prior to Monday's news conference, the department released a video that showed a man striking an officer with a skateboard on Saturday. The move was part of a broader effort to get as many as many people as possible to see what happened during the protest and during August 10th looting in downtown Chicago. The next headline reads, Ask the Admin, a daily question for the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District's Julie Pride. Here's the question. What is the rate of false negative results from the saliva test that the University of Illinois is requiring for all on campus? It claims it is not less accurate than the nasal swab test, and I have read in the New York Times that the test yields up to 20% false negatives. Answer. The sensitivity of saliva was validated against the nasal and nasopharyngeal tests, and it was comparable. The next headline reads, 18-year-old killed, fatal crash, still under investigation. This article is written by Deborah Pressey and is based out of Gifford. A Saturday accident that claimed the life of an 18-year-old Gifford man remained under investigation Monday, according to District 10 Illinois State Police. The victim, Matthew J. Correll, C-O-R-R-E-L-L, was pronounced dead at the accident site at U.S. 136 and Champaign County Road, 2400 East, police said. Mr. Correll was one of two bicyclists in the three-vehicle accident. The other bicyclist, a 15-year-old male teen, was taken to a local hospital with non-life-threatening injuries, police said. According to a preliminary investigation, Mr. Correll was riding westbound in the center of the lane of U.S. 136, a quarter mile east of County Road 2400 East. The 15-year-old bicyclist was also riding west in the westbound lane behind Mr. Correll. Both bicyclists were allegedly struck from behind by a westbound Chrysler Crossfire driven by Sean H. Allen, 53, of St. Joseph, police said. The next headline reads, Savoy Rotarian Supply, Much Needed Lift, Out of Savoy, by Jim Rosso. Members of the Rotary Club of Savoy on Monday gathered at the entrance to Carrie Busey Elementary to help unload 30 backpacks stuffed with school supplies. It's the eighth consecutive year the Rotarians have chipped in for Savoy's K-5 crowd, which this fall will start the school year studying remotely. That doesn't lessen the need for supplies, project coordinator Eileen Jaretka said. Supplies aren't cheap, she said. There are so many kids who can't afford everything they need. A grant from Prairie State Bank and Trust in Savoy helped offset the cost. Rotary's primary fundraiser for the backpacks, a pancake breakfast in March, was a casualty of COVID-19. Carrie Busey principal Greg Keir said the backpacks will be distributed next week, 5 per class. The supplies will be well used, he told the group, even with distance learning. And there are two pictures from this drop-off. Two pictures, one captioned, Savoy Rotarians from left, Karen Sharp, Eileen Jaretka, and Phil Van Ness, unload backpacks that were then wheeled into Carrie Busey Elementary by Principal Greg Keir, right, on Monday in Savoy. So there's a picture of Principal Keir with a dolly, and he's wheeling in lots of backpacks inside the school. I'm Susan Muirhead, and this has been part one of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, August 18th, 2020. I'll be back shortly to read with you, and I'll read part two of the News Gazette, so please stay with me. Thanks again for listening, and I hope you have a wonderful day.